Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And welcome to Steve and Johnny's last show before Halloween. Or maybe it's just their last show.
That just jumped in there.
Okay, first things first. It's our last show before Halloween.
Yes.
It's our last show in October.
Yes.
It is not our last show because our ID cards still worked. So calm down, folks. This is not the last show. Again, our ID cards
work. Well, it's not over yet, so we don't know.
Yes.
All options are on the table.
And it's a shorty tonight.
As opposed to next week.
I know!
Next week. But for those of you who have said, we don't like your short shows. Oh boy, are we going to make up for that next week with the time change.
Yeah.
We'll have not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but six, count them, six honking hours of the show.
Yes, and we like to tell the story. And of course, Bob Fukuda, keeper of the big plug, is in here. I know you love that night, don't you?
Oh, it's my favorite.
Yes.
To watch the clock go backwards?
I know. Awesome. You don't have to do anything, though,
nope.
Right?
It's because all automatic.
There was a time back in the day, remember? We were so old that we remember when engineering would be running around setting clocks and changing things because it was a big deal.
And we worked for a radio station that told us, oh, we'll just rerun your 1 o'clock hour. We said, no!
Yes, they did.
That was the famous one. Just rerun the 1 o'clock. No one will ever know.
And I'm like, really? Thank you.
Yeah.
Unless it's my best hour of broadcasting. Then. Yeah.
But we'll give you a week's advance notice.
Yes.
Next week, when we reset the clocks and we do that hour again.
That bonus hour.
Yeah.
That will be the do-over hour.
Right.
So be thinking about anything that happened over the last year that you, if you had the chance, you would like to do over. And we'll talk about that in that hour.
Yes. Doesn't have to be a bad thing. It could be something good that you say, gee.
You said, boy, that was fun. I want to do that over again.
Yes. I wish I'd savored that.
Do I get to do the Zamboni twice?
You do.
You do?
Yes. That's right.
There you go.
This place is going to be really clean.
So does that mean nice and clean?
Yes.
So does that mean we're doing two last calls?
We will. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Let's do that.
All right. So now,
we'll show them.
Do we need to get clearance from the prize closet keeper?
Nah. Wait, isn't there
They'll get something.
Yeah. It's a rule of thumb, right? If you ask, it's
you give them the opportunity to say no.
So we won't be asking.
Julian, what do you think? Are we asking or just doing?
You're moving your lips.
We're not hearing.
How about now?
Yeah.
Good. That works.
We can just do it.
Okay.
If anything, they'll get the privilege of being on the airwaves.
That's true.
Okay.
Yes.
Ron, what do you think? Ask or just do?
I say just do it.
Just do
okay.
it.
It's better to ask the
forgiveness than permission.
That's the one I was trying to think of. That's it. It always works.
That's what my kids say.
Yeah.
Ron's in the newsroom chortling because he'll be out of here before he gets an extra hour of sleep next week.
That's right. I'm enjoying that.
Yeah.
I'm liking that.
But then Gabe gets to work an extra hour.
Yeah. Well, no, he's taking the night off.
He likes that.
The night off. Is
Gabe always wants to do an extra hour.
Is Gabe taking
the night off? Yeah, I think Gabe.
He told me he's taking the
night
off.
That's what I thought.
So who's playing the part of Gabe next week?
Oh, Gabe, who's filling in for you next week?
Probably Sylvia.
He has no idea. Probably Sylvia.
He has no idea.
Like it's not my concern.
He doesn't care because he doesn't care.
Yeah. He's got a party to go
off.
To.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Yes.
You figure it out.
See, I was waiting for the chortle. I got it.
There it is.
Now it can go on. You do that so well. It's just kind of like it comes from deep down by your diaphragm.
You guys crack me up.
It's good.
I like the show.
So by the way, we both loved the fact that you put up a link to Brenton Wood this week.
Oh, yeah. The Boogum Boogum song.
We were sitting in the parking lot before we came upstairs, and I said, did you see that Ron posted the Oogum Boogum song? And Steve said, yes. And you remember actually interviewing
I interviewed Brenton Wood back in, this would have been about 60, it was my second job in radio, 67, 68, 69. And I was trying to think and finally did think of the other hit song that he had.
Yes.
Just Give Me Some Kind of Sign.
Oh, that was a great one, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he was not a one-hit wonder.
No, not at all.
And he's still alive. He's 83 years old.
Well, should we get him on the show?
We should find him, yes.
Julian, there's your assignment. We want to get Brenton Wood, who had a hit with the Oogum Boogum song and Give Me Some Kind of Sign. We want to get him on the show.
I believe he lives in Shreveport, Louisiana, too.
That would be Shreveport, Louisiana.
Louisiana, yes. Okay, real quick question. Ron, have you purchased Halloween candy for Thursday night?
No, I haven't. We don't usually get many Halloween trick-or-treaters. So.
Well, you know, the first time that you don't buy anything?
There they are.
Yeah.
I guess I should, just for emergency
purposes.
Well,
get something that you don't like. We were talking about this off the air. Take a wild guess what the average, this year, they say the average amount of money we're going to spend on Halloween candy. What do you think the average is? Bob said he thought it was like $100. I said, that's a little high.
The average, maybe $40.
Actually, it's $59.
Wow.
But then I remember the prices that I saw in Walgreens the other day. I'm like, that's easy. Yeah, a couple bags of candy, you're $59.
Yeah.
Just like that. So if you buy something you don't like, then what, you give it away if nobody shows up at the house? But as I was saying off the air, I did that one time. I bought Good and Plenty's, and then I realized I actually like Good and Plenty. I thought it would be something I would never eat, and I was eating them all the way up into Christmas.
I was never a Good and Plenty fan. And what is the...
Charlie says, I love my Good and Plenty. That was a commercial.
Now you've really got me rings the bell.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Now you've got me seeing that animation.
Yeah.
Yes. It was kind of like Clutch Cargo animation.
Yeah.
It was very stilted. But look at me. I'm actually in the train with Charlie. It's I'm demonstrating.
But if you're going to have candy for the kids, what is it? There's like a color of light.
turquoise.
That you use if you're saying we have vegan and gluten-free and all that sort
yes,
of stuff.
Yes, it's allergen-free. So yeah. If you want the kids to know they can come to your house, because if you've got peanut allergies, that would be very scary if a kid goes and you end up giving them peanut M&Ms or something like that. So if you have a turquoise, teal, that color blue pumpkin on your porch, that's like you're saying we have allergen free things. Don't give pencils and erasers and things like that. There are good things that you can give that are safe, like Nerd clusters, my new favorite thing.
So Nerd clusters?
Yeah, I bought those little packages of Nerd clusters thinking that those will get stale. I'll take them to work because there's no way. And I made the mistake of opening a pack. Oh, my gosh. Are they addictive?
They don't get stale.
They don't get stale. You're right. That's right. Good. You read the in those multi-syllable words there that you can't pronounce. Yeah, they don't get stale.
No.
We're all about Halloween tonight. A little later, we're going to have our resident musical archivist Don Romano is going to join us with some rare, funny Halloween songs. Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, is going to join us. And we're going to talk about haunted cars.
Yes.
And he's got information on the new Volkswagen Scout and a whole bunch more things. Then, as we have traditionally done for years, those of you who have been with us for a while, know that every Halloween season, we had our late friend Chicago's Ghost Hunter, Richard Crow, on the show. And he would share some wonderful stories. And probably the most popular of those stories is about Resurrection Mary. So a little later tonight, we will be replaying our last conversation with Richard and his telling of the tale of Resurrection Mary.
Wasn't Archer Avenue in the news this week?
Yes.
Scariest road in the country.
I think it is. Ron, didn't they say it was the scariest road in the country?
It was one of them. I don't know if it was the scariest.
Oh, let's make it the.
Well, it was the scariest in Illinois, I think.
Yeah.
Because of Resurrection Mary.
Because of
Resurrection
Mary. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great story. I've never been there. So I have no plans to go there. I'm a scaredy cat.
I hear you.
I'll take everybody's word for it.
And I have an active imagination. So I'm like, I'm going to see that girl over here, over there, down the street, behind me, everywhere. So, no, you don't want to be driving down Archer with me because I'll probably be in the floorboard the way I used to ride in the car because I was scared of my dad's driving. So I used to curl up in the floorboard. But that's another story. By the way, real quick, a listener says, so happy to hear your voices. Boom shakalaka. We don't get many boom shakalakas.
Yeah. Boom shakalaka waka. Boom shakalaka.
We got a lot to cover tonight on WGN, so stay with us, please.
Well, you know you make me want to shout. Kick my heels up and shout. Throw my hands up and shout. Throw my head back and shout. Come on now. Don't forget to say you will. Don't forget to say
say it right now, baby. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Time for a few shout-outs, and thank you to everybody who's listening from, what do we think, about 15 states tonight?
15 states have tuned in tonight. We added Utah to our list of states that have tuned in, and many the old-fashioned way, because as we have said for many, many years,
when the shadows get longer,
the signal gets stronger. Okay, first things first. If you listen to our show on a Saturday night, you've heard me mention Chuck Snitchler. I call him the number one friend to this radio station because of this great Facebook page that he is one of the administrators for. And it's all about keeping you up to date on everything that's happening with WGN Radio and TV, past and present. Well, Chuck has a birthday tomorrow, so I want us to be the first to wish him a
happy birthday to Chuck. Happy birthday to Chuck. Happy birthday to Chuck.
It's his 54th birthday tomorrow. So, Chuck, thank you for everything you do for this radio station and for us, and happy birthday. I hope it's a great one. David Shine is listening with his cat named Kedzie Cat.
And I love that.
He said, happy Catter Day, when in fact tomorrow is Black Cat Day.
Yes.
And there's a reason for that. We'll tell you later on. Sherry Hanrahan is in Romeoville. Bonnie and George are in Elgin. And I'd like to thank them for the lovely cards, a Get Well card and a birthday card they sent me. Old-fashioned way. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Bonnie's in Butternut, Wisconsin. Let me roll through some of these. Delphine Behrman is listening from Chicago. Brian Lefevre is our buddy in Bridgeport. Mary Gold is in Tinley Park. Edwin James is tuned in. Tom Kazmarek is in Highland Park. John Couture is in Warren, Michigan. Nancy Pugh is tuned in on the web from West Virginia tonight. Donna Youngheim is in Oak Lawn. Jan Reinhardt is in the laboratory. Beverly Ann Goodall is in Highwood, Illinois. Jim Smith is listening the old-fashioned way. Sharon Malone is in K-Town. Peter Jukabowicz is in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Tom Feed is from Medina. He's listening on his radio that he bought back in the 1970s. Brian Haig is in Kentucky. And he says that Alexa is playing Screaming Jay Hawkins.
Cool.
We'll have more on that later on tonight. Leon Avanowski. I'm sorry, Leon, if I butchered that one, but it's nice to have you along. Susan Powell is in Memphis. Scott Cooper is in Naperville. Nancy Taffy's in West Allis. Bonnie Pearson is listening on our AM radio with Lola. They're tucked in bed, tuned in tonight. Becky Offsayoff is in Northbrook. Judy B., Lake Geneva. Can I just go back to Lake Geneva real quick?
Mm-hmm.
The woman from the tourism board that was on with John Williams, if you did not hear it, at some point,
she was so much fun.
Go to the WGN website and click on that. It is an amazing segment with her. Ellen Maria is in McHenry. Richard Wade is in Missouri. Bobby Danos is out in Sammage. Lloyd Moncrief. Lester Clyden is our trucking buddy. Susan Schimmel. Helen Thomas. And Gene Jacobson. Edward Summers. John Kane. Carrie Carlson. Patrick Heumann. And thank you very much. If I missed you, I'll catch you next week for sure, because we'll have 6 hours next week.
And we got a text from 330 area code. Mike is listening from Akron, Ohio.
Yes. We have a bunch of folks listening to us in South Florida, and we appreciate that. And as I said, Nebraska and Utah tuned in tonight, too.
A lot coming up tonight. Stay with us on WGN.
Even a man whose heart is pure and says his prayers at night can change to a wolf when the wolf bane blooms and the full moon shining bright.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
There's medicine for that cold.
That was the Frantics.
Yeah.
And a werewolf. That was done in the late 50s or early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the first records for Liberty Records. And that was back in the day when they didn't have a whole lot of a budget. So the flip side of that song was called No Werewolf. And it was the same instrumental with no narration, no werewolf sounds, no nothing.
No snorting, nothing.
No, none of that stuff.
Wow.
But that werewolf snort is one way that we're introducing our resident musical archivist, who is nice enough to join us with some rare songs at different times of the year. Don Romano. Don, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Yes, and Don is the keeper of the American Songbook Facebook page. Very active on that, right?
Yes, Don's American Songbook. Very
now,
active on it.
You've got to put underneath all of these other things that you do, law, therapy, you're the resident music archivist.
Yes.
A lot of people can't say that, Don.
That's right. And it's an honor I'm happy to have.
Well, we were laughing about the fact that you were in here at the 4th of July, and I guess it was easier to come up with wacky 4th of July songs than Halloween songs,
yes,
right?
Yes, this was a challenge, coming up with good, wacky Halloween songs. You'd think there'd be a lot. Of course, we know all the Monster Mash and all that, but we want deeper cuts than that.
Yes, yes. Because with rock and pop, we have any number of songs. I don't even think they were intended, like Devil Woman, Voodoo Queen. Those things just so happen to get played at Halloween because they are fitting. But when you go back, as you say, for the deeper cuts, it's like, really? There's not a lot out there.
A little harder to find, especially when you go back, as far as I go back. And, I was able to track down a couple, though, so did a lot of research.
Oh, you had some goodies that you're going to talk about tonight. Yes. And we'd like to say, for people who have not heard Don on the show before, he's not 103. He's actually quite young. He's an old soul who is doing a really great job of keeping music from a different era alive.
Yes. Well, thank you. Yes, I try my best to keep it relevant and keep people listening to it, because it's good, and it's good to... You know, if you want new ideas, read old books and all that. I think it's important to keep the flame alive of the American songbook.
But also, as we were talking off the air, you try to find some of these old recordings, and then you have to kind of find a way to digitize a lot of this stuff, or it's going to go away and nobody's ever going to be able to hear it.
Exactly, yeah. And sometimes it is a race against time with the way some of these formats don't stay preserved very well. Sometimes I'm handling audio, you know, reel-to-reel tape, and it's chipping and chipping.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, you're just erasing parts of the material just by handling it. So you have to be very careful with it, and you have to act quickly. So that's my mission, and that's what I try to do in my small way.
Should we just jump in, since we're all about some unusual Halloweenish songs? What's the first one you got for us?
The first one that I pulled was Guy Lombardo, of all people. You know, usually he's was the king of New Year's Eve.
Sure.
But he also recorded a song called Halloween, appropriately titled Halloween for the holiday. This one was a song that was written by two fairly famous songwriters, Harold Arlen, who wrote all the music for The Wizard of Oz, Over the Rainbow and all that. And then Ralph Blaine, who may be less known, but he co-wrote songs for the film Meet Me in St. Louis with Hugh Martin, including Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. So he's somebody who was already in the holiday genre anyway, but he wrote this song, Halloween, for a Betty Grable film from 1950 called My Blue Heaven. It's an interesting tune, not as terribly well known, but it's Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians from 1950, so it's fun to hear that.
All right.
Big pumpkin pie in the sky. Children sing, children waltz. Who gives a darn if your face is false? Jump on your broom like a witch. Go and toss all your gloom in the ditch. Go out on the street for a trick or a treat. You're a sinner, strike it rich. Halloween, Halloween, all other holidays fall between. The night of All Hallows, so light up the tallow and make it a bright Halloween.
It's a little bouncy for a Halloween.
I'm not exactly spooky.
No
snarling werewolves or anything. That's a jaunty little tune.
But I love some of the rhymes.
Yes. Get your witch on the broom. You got your pumpkin pie. And they covered all the ground, right?
They did. There wasn't no stone left unturned.
That's great. And it sounds very Guy Lombardo. I mean,
oh boy, does it.
The instrumentation is like Auld Lang Syne.
Right, exactly.
That is good. So that took us back to 1950.
Yes.
And that was a Betty Grable movie?
Yes, it was featured in a Betty Grable movie. It's called My Blue Heaven.
Hmm.
So, not as well known, but...
Well, are they dressed up? Are they standing around a piano dressed for Halloween?
I forget the segment. I feel like they're in a nightclub or something. It's been so long since I've seen that one.
I've got to find that one.
Yeah. And is My Blue Heaven featured in My Blue Heaven?
I believe it is. Yes, I believe.
Which I think was originally from, I want to say, because my dad had this album, I want to say 1924 Gene Austin, the first million-selling record.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's an old one.
Can I tell you what we had for dinner last night? No, but no. Do I remember that? Yeah.
100 years ago.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's crazy.
We need to dig that up, the original version of My Blue Heaven.
Yikes. Yeah. All right, well.
Well, maybe not this week, but Julian, we've got 6 hours next week. So My Blue Heaven, Gene Austin, the original 1924 recording, the first million seller.
That'll happen
next week.
I accept my assignment.
We're just piling things on for next week.
Yes, for 6 hours, because you know the time changes next week. Exactly. So, yeah. Oh, boy, 6 hours.
Buckle up.
It'll be just like the old days when we used to start at 11 o'clock at night and wrap up at 5 in the morning.
Yeah. Well, it was 5:30 for a while, too.
Yeah, you're right.
And then they said, you know, that last half hour is killing them. We had to take that last half hour off. All right. We got a lot more fun Halloween songs. Deep cuts, as we say. Things that you have probably never heard in your life with our musical archivist, Don Romano, in studio with us here on WGN.
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. Stop the things you do. What's up? I ain't lying. Yeah, I can't stand. Woo! No running around. I can't stand. No putting me down. I put a spell on you.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's our late friend, Screamin' Jay Hawkins. Still miss him. And I put a spell on you. We're talking about unusual Halloween songs with our resident musical archivist, Don Romano. And Don, you brought in a version of I Put a Spell on You by Screamin' Jay that we'd never heard before. Tell us about this.
Yes. So the interesting thing about this song is that There are two versions of this song. There's that version, and then there was one that he recorded in 1955. So that one was released in October of 56, but he recorded it originally in 1955. And it was supposed to be a refined love song, a blues ballad initially, and he recorded it that way. For Grand Records, that's the recording that I brought today in 1955. They didn't release that version. So instead, the story goes that they were going to re-record it. And during a session to re-record the song, the producer, it was a guy named Arnold Maxson, came in with a bunch of alcohol, apparently.
Oh!
And he brought alcohol to the recording studio. Everybody got very drunk, is the story. And they created the version that we know today.
Wow.
So he's screaming and grunting in that one and making all those sort of noises. And I guess purportedly he did not remember recording it is the sort of sort of the story behind it is that he's so inebriated he did not remember.
He told us that he did get really drunk at the session that produced the hit record, and I believe he did say that he didn't remember a whole lot of it, and then it wound up being a hit.
And he said that he was glad he was, because that's what made it the hit.
Yeah.
But he did not tell us about the earlier version that had been recorded. So that's what we're going to hear now, right?
Yeah.
Going 1 year earlier.
Yeah, that was only released in 2006. It had not been released up until that point. So it's a relatively, in the span of time, a recent release. So
okay.
And I will point out, because I listened to this earlier, musicians in the crowd will want to throw something at their radio because the drummer is so off the beat on this. But so this is the original, and this is from what year? 1955?
55, yes.
Okay.
Okay, I put a spell on you.
Screamin' Jay.
Because you're mine. Stop the things you do.
One of the takeaways from this is the value of a good arrangement.
Because we all just went, ooh, the drummer is really off. And the guitar player was like, this is my song. Let me play my guitar. I like the drunk version better.
Yeah. But you could hear that Screamin' Jay's voice is still...
Yeah.
Anything he did, his voice was so good.
Yeah.
I always thought it was kind of a shame that he was really typecast because of the success of I Put a Spell on You. And he wasn't allowed to do a lot of other things because his voice had operatic qualities to it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the song was chosen by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, one of the 500 songs that shaped rock and roll as we know it. And much of that was because of his just free form, just let it all hang out, screaming and yelling. Because, again, that was in the 50s. That if you turned on your radio and that was playing, that would be pretty startling.
Do you remember the story he told us? He was performing, I think it was one of the Alan Freed shows at the Paramount in New York. And I think it was one of the members of the Drifters. Screamin' Jay used to come on stage. He had this coffin that he would be in.
You have to tell, though, what he was wearing.
He was wearing a white suit. And he was in the coffin. And they'd start playing the music, and he would open the coffin door and come out. So to play a joke on him, one of the members of the Drifters, there was like a little latch.
It was a matchbook, he said, they would put in there to keep the coffin open so that he could just lift it and rise up to start singing.
And they're playing the intro. He's trying to open it. He can't open it.
Oh my God.
He still can't open it.
They had pulled
it. And they said you could see on stage, you could see the coffin shaking around.
And they thought that was part of the bit.
And so finally, I don't know if one of the drifters came and finally opened it or something like that, but he said when he got on stage, he had to make sure that he was facing the audience in his white outfit so they wouldn't see what had happened to the back of the outfit while he was...
Oh, no.
Yeah. Because he said he was scared because nobody was coming to rescue him.
And he was, you could say he was scared bleepless.
Yes, he was. Bleepless.
And Screamin' Jay told us, so yes. I absolutely yes. believe that.
Yes. Wow. Oh, we got a lot more rarities coming up on our Halloween show here on...
Bleepless rarities.
Yes, so stay with us here on WGN.
She'll put a spell on you. She'll put a spell on you. She's the witch queen of New Orleans.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Love that. Red Bone and the Witch Queen of New Orleans. If you go to the Steve and Johnny Facebook page, which is cleverly enough, facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show, you will see that Johnny has posted a picture. We were talking about our friend Screamin' Jay Hawkins, and Johnny has posted a picture of us with Screamin' Jay back when he was in our studio and he came to Chicago to headline the 13th annual Chicago Blues Fest. And as you can see from the clock on the wall behind us, it was during the 1 o'clock news.
It was.
That we took that picture.
Yes, and he stayed till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And it was a great night. One of many, many nights that he spent with us. But we've proven that there are a number of songs that pass as Halloween songs in rock and pop music.
Right.
But our guest, Don Romano, is here because he's the keeper of the Great American Songbook, and we are finding some things that you are probably never, ever heard before.
By the way, you should go to Don's Facebook page, which is Don's Great American Songbook at facebook.com.
So what's the next one we're going to play?
So the next one that I pulled is a song called I'm Gonna Haunt You, which it features Ray Noble and his orchestra. So mm-hmm. we're going back very far. This is...
To the 40s?
Very early 40s, 1941. Ray Noble had a very big orchestra, and he was a composer as well, English. And he's performing with a trio of girl singers, and the group is called Lee, Lynn, and Lou. And they made this recording in 1941. They were from East St. Louis, Illinois. And two of the girls, Lee and Lynn, were twins. And the Chicago connection here is that the trio first auditioned for Ray at the Palmer House in the Empire Room.
Hmm.
So they drove up from East St. Louis to Chicago to audition. This was on December 26, 1940. And they did a 4-hour audition with him.
Wow.
And were hired on the spot and performed at the New Year's Eve party at the Palmer House, which was remotely broadcast on WGN.
Huh.
New Year's Eve 1940 from the Palmer House. So,
but Noble had he's a big writer. I think he was Grammy winner or Grammy nominated.
Yeah. Oh, he wrote many.
The Very
songs.
Thought of You.
Yes, The Very Thought of You is probably his best known mm-hmm. one. But and he was a prolific in the recording era too. So, and he was probably a little older by the time he was playing the Palmer House here. So. He had a very interesting career. And actually, I got to get to know Lynn, who was part of Lee, Lynn, and Lou.
Uh-huh.
And she was a Hollywood actress. She was in a couple of different movies. She was in the biopicture about the songwriter Jerome Kern.
Hmm.
And she was in a couple other movies. She did one of the Andy Hardy movies with mm-hmm. Mickey Rooney.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a very sweet lady. She just passed away a couple of years, well, now or probably almost 10 years ago, but mm-hmm. She lived in Michigan City, Indiana, and we went to go out and visit her, and she told us stories about her time, how she she has her autograph from Frank Sinatra, something like to the cutest twins I know. And so they were very famous. And so we would talk about kind of her time in Chicago in the area.
So she's on this cut, I'm Gonna Haunt You.
Yes.
And it's G-O-N-N-A, right? I'm Gonna Haunt You.
Yes.
I mean, it's like they're getting real down and dirty here.
Yes.
So this is Ray Noble and the girls Lee, Lynn, and Lou singing I'm Gonna Haunt You.
Fun. During the beginning of that, I kept visualizing an old black and white cartoon.
Yeah.
It was that kind of music.
So jaunty.
And that was back in the days when the orchestras would play the full song for about half of the record, and then the vocalists would come in and do what they did.
Yes.
And that was kind of fun. I like that.
So we could play this. It wouldn't work musically, but I'm just thinking it's kind of a creepy message. I'm going to haunt you.
Exactly.
You know? And it made me think of the police. I'll be watching you.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
like, ooh, wow. Now we got this whole
Somebody
stalker
should do a medley of that.
Yes. I'm going to haunt you. They had lovely voices, though.
Yeah, very close harmonies.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a nice sound. They blended well together. So.
Because the twins were in that trio.
Yes.
And as we've always said, there's nothing like the harmony of siblings.
Yeah. Sure.
It's just
sibling harmony.
Yeah, it's amazing.
There's something about that, yeah.
We're talking Halloween music, scary stuff, spooky stuff, fun stuff, and things you haven't heard. Probably a lot
Ever.
Of things that you've never heard.
Right.
With our music archivist, Don Romano. And Don, what's up next?
Well, I pulled a tune called The Headless Horseman. And this is K-Star, one of my favorite vocalists, with the Billy Butterfield Quintet. And this one comes from a transcription disc from 1949. The music was by Gene DePaul, and the lyrics are by Don Ray.
You want, now, jargon alert for people who don't know. Mm-hmm. Transcription disc.
Yes, I should explain. Transcription discs were usually cut by different companies for promotional or for radio purposes, and they were large. They were a standard size record was a 12 inch, 33 and a third LP is probably your most traditional size disc today, and then you have 45s a little bit smaller. You got a 10 inch somewhere in between there. These were 16 inch discs, so they were designed to put more material on them, and the playback for those machines were usually just they were for radios. Mm-hmm. They weren't for consumer use, so these were kind of how they became collector's items, because sometimes people wouldn't have the playback for them, or the studios would get rid of them because they are difficult to store as somebody who has a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they were asked to, if they were commissioned by a specific organization, they were told to destroy them once they are played live. They were meant to be played once to be gotten rid of. So the ones that survive, the collectors, of course, anything in scarcity, people are going to go look for them. Mm-hmm. So this one is from a transcription disc that survived, and we're happy it did because it's fun. So it has a spookier touch than some of the other songs we've played up to this point, and it's fun.
The Headless Horseman.
And what goes on when it gets late? Along about midnight, the ghosts and banshees get together for a jamboree. There's ghosts with horns and saucer eyes. Some have fangs about this size. Some short and fat, some tall and thin. And some don't even bother to wear their skin.
I'm telling you, brother, it's a fearful sight just to see what goes on in the night.
When the spooks have a midnight jamboree, they break it up with a fiendish glee.
Ghosts are bad, but the one that's cursed is the headless horseman.
When he goes jogging across the land, holding his noggin right in his hand, demons take one look and groan.
Then they hit the road for parts unknown.
Well, there's no rage like a spook that's burned.
The ghost don't like him and he's really burned.
He swears to the longest day he's dead.
Well, I'll show them that I can get ahead.
He swears to the longest day he's dead, but I'll show them I can get ahead. That's fun.
That's spurned. The lyrics are wonderful.
Yeah. It's K-Star. I've always loved K-Star.
Yeah. And this could be popular now. I don't know if you guys know, but this Halloween, the Headless Horseman is all the rage.
Oh, yeah.
You can go into stores that are selling Halloween tchotchkes. I bought one. I bought a Headless Horseman.
Yeah.
He's holding a pumpkin instead of his head.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So,
and the pumpkin head lights up.
Lights up.
It's very cool. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That is a goodie. And what year was that?
1949.
Wow.
But that's good quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do a lot now with, when you treat the discs and you clean them and you get the right needle for playback, they can sound really nice.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So is that one of your gems that you glommed onto?
Yes, yes. That is one of the transcription discs from my... I've got a couple K-Star transcription discs.
That's awesome.
Not too many, but she's one of my favorite vocalists. She's up there.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Again, you can follow Don at his American Songbook Facebook page. I know it was hard unearthing these Halloween tunes, but these are great.
Oh, good.
Okay. And you left us with a couple more. As we said, there's so many that fall under the heading of rock and pop.
Yes.
That maybe weren't even meant to be Halloween songs.
Yeah.
Bobby Boris Pickett is one. We'll have to play the little gem that you brought in. We'll play it later on tonight because... there are things I, when you sent us the list, I was like, what? Where have these been all my life?
we have to revisit some of the unusual Halloween songs again next year, if you don't mind. Can we book you for this show a year from now?
Absolutely. I'll free up my schedule.
But first, there's Christmas. We have a lot of Christmas tunes that we can talk about, right?
That I'll have plenty to bring.
Let's do that. Maybe we'll have to do 2 hours when we do Christmas to bring in some of
we might do that.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
And, you know, we'll bring the punch and the cookies, and we'll just play some of these wacky tunes that probably 99% of the audience has never heard before. That's
Absolutely.
What I love about it.
Yeah. And again, blatant plug, facebook.com/Don's American Songbook. Mm-hmm. facebook.com/Don's American Songbook. That's where you can find a lot of the stuff that... The Don posts, and you do a lot of that. Oh, I love your Happy Halloween picture.
Oh, yeah.
Happy Halloween from the Boswell Legacy. And
oh,
you've
yeah.
got pictures. You commemorate people's birthdays, and it's just a really interesting page.
And if you have some of these gems that you would like to give to Don, contact us, and we'll put you in contact with him, because he's ready to rent another house to store all of his goodies, right?
That's right, yes. I'll try to fit in there somewhere. I'll clear out a little space.
You're not going to pass up any of these gems that somebody might want to just give to you.
I have
right?
a hard time saying no.
That's Don't we know that story, too? Well, thanks a million for coming in tonight.
Yes, thank you for having me. This is
thank
always so
you.
Much fun. I
so,
always enjoy coming.
Some real gems, too. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for being had, and we'll talk to you again around Christmas.
Absolutely. I'm here for it.
We're going to talk cars and haunted vehicles with Tom Appel.
Resurrection Mary coming up with Richard Crowe a little later tonight.
Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. You know that melody, but you've never heard it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of Tom's tunes. Tom being the publisher of Consumer Guide, Tom Appel. And Tom, tonight's theme is Halloween?
Yeah. Yeah, just straight up Halloween.
And that tune was recognizable because it is what theme song, Tom?
That is the Munsters theme.
Yes!
As covered in 2011 by the Surf Dogs.
The Surf Dogs. Oh, I love the Munsters so much. I love that show. I love that theme. And I actually like that version by the Surf Dogs. Very good.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I can see rocking out to that as you're tooling around in a vehicle. In fact, let's start right there. Since you're the car guy, what are you driving these days?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. I'm driving a really interesting vehicle this week. It is the BMW i5. It's an electric version of the 5 Series midsize sedan, and it is a very, very good conversion of that vehicle. Making it electric, I think, arguably makes it a better car. It is so quick, it's so refined, and it is otherwise still a BMW in terms of ride and handling. I have one complaint, and it's a complaint I have about a lot of electric vehicles, probably due to the weight of the battery. There's some interesting stuff that happens sort of as a secondary rebound after you hit a bump, and it doesn't feel quite as settled as a gasoline-powered BMW might. It's a minor quibble. I don't know if all people would pick up on it. It's bugging me a little, but I otherwise love this car.
Okay, let me ask you for a little more definitive explanation of interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Does it shimmy? Does it shake? What happens?
No, what's interesting is just how good a car it is, having become electric. It's only 335 horsepower, which in the world of electric vehicles is not huge, but the acceleration is immediate. The throttle response is fantastic. There's no noise whatsoever. This is a mm-hmm. very quiet car. But really nice to know, too, is that despite the added weight of the battery, which is considerable, in this case it's probably 800 pounds or so, the ride and handling, specifically the handling, and the steering are as good as any other BMW. It still feels like a 5 Series. And for years and years, for decades really, the 5 Series has sort of been a benchmark mm-hmm. of European tradition handling. And this car lives up to that.
Now, what range are we talking about, and what price range are we talking?
I'm driving a very, very base version, but it does have the M Performance package. The one I'm driving doesn't start at. It goes for $76,000. With the 21-inch wheels, which hurts your range a little bit, it gets 270 miles of range.
Okay, I want to take you back to weird things happen when you hit a bump. What are you sensing? What happens?
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing, and I've noticed this in many electric vehicles. Basically, the chassis engineers are having a little trouble controlling a vehicle that is the same size as the gasoline vehicles they've been working with for years, but weighs almost half a ton more. And the initial impact, you're driving along, the initial impact, very well controlled. In a German sense, it's firm, you feel the bump, but mm-hmm. there's no harshness whatsoever. But when it recoils after that, it seems to go up again. It rebounds upward in a dramatic sense that isn't well controlled. So it's just it's a very weird feeling. It mostly comes from the rear of the vehicle. And you would have to be looking for it, I think. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would never pick up on this. But it is a characteristic of electric vehicles. And I'm interested that BMW is having a hard time with it.
Now, you said earlier that this was a conversion. So I have to ask, how much is conversion and how much is all new in the structure that we're dealing with?
What BMW is doing with some of its vehicles is making them compatible with either gasoline or electric drivetrain. So this is basically the gasoline-powered vehicle with an electric drivetrain. So it should feel very familiar. Now, some of BMW's vehicle, there's a vehicle called the iX, for example, was designed to be electric. And in fact, that does ride and handle a little bit better, in my opinion.
But haven't you kind of put your finger on one of the problems? If it is a vehicle that is used for both, that becomes a little more problematic to take something that should be a structure that is used to dealing with an internal combustion engine, and now you're putting, as you said, a whole lot more weight on this body frame, and that isn't always easy to do.
Yeah, Steve, you make an excellent point. I've heard some engineering conversations about this that I wasn't qualified to jump into. But your point is well taken, that this vehicle is to some extent a compromise because it needs to go either direction, whereas a pure electric vehicle or a pure gasoline power wouldn't have some small compromises. But for BMW, it does allow them to build them on the same assembly line. And if they need to, they don't need to do this yet, to adjust production between the two products.
I have to ask again, since we're talking about the same structure, how does this impact braking? If you're doing 60 and you try to slam on the brakes with this extra weight, now how does that impact the braking?
Oh, they would use different brakes on the two vehicles, I think. But these brakes are outstanding. They're as good as any BMW brakes I've ever used before. It also uses, for people who aren't familiar with this setup, one-pedal driving, which means that you can use your gas pedal more or less rheostatically. Ooh. So that as you lift up off the gas, you're getting braking right away. So the electric motor is actually creating the brake force for you, not the brakes. You get used to this very quickly. Some people love it. When they drive an electric vehicle, other people don't, and they turn it off.
Oh, so it's optional then. You don't have to drive it like that.
You don't. It's the feature is standard, but you don't have to drive it like that. If you do use it, you will get more energy regeneration from the brakes to charge the battery.
Okay. And again, just to clarify, you said the battery averages 100 pounds?
Oh, no, more like 1,000 pounds.
1,000 pounds?
That's why we have different checkbooks.
Well, I just wanted to clarify because I'm thinking about a car battery. I mean, I've carried a car battery before. That's a huge difference.
This car battery you would not carry.
No, I'm not going to be carrying that.
No.
My back hurts at the thought of it.
This isn't your average Delco.
This is true. You're not running to Walmart to pick one of these up. That's for sure. Okay.
Yeah, for people who don't know, an electric car battery typically takes up the entire floor of the vehicle.
Yeah.
You're sitting on top of the battery. Yeah, they run 800 to 1,000 pounds. They're very heavy.
Wow. Okay, we are going to take a break. We're talking cars with Tom Appel. He's publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's been a real busy guy. There are even some recalls. But since this is our Halloween show, we're even going to talk about some spooky haunted cars in history. So stay with us here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's one of Tom's tunes, Tom being Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide. And Tom, why am I getting thirsty when I hear this?
If you are my age, and I'm going on 60, if you are my age, you remember this song well. Mm-hmm. That was Every Day is Halloween by Ministry, and it was absolutely huge when it came out. And people may remember it because it was used in an old-style commercial for Old Style Dry.
Yep.
If you remember Old Style Dry, what a weird fad that was, dry beer.
Yeah. Like, really? If I'm thirsty, why do I want something dry? Unless it's a good dry wine.
Well, since we're talking Halloween things, should we segue into some haunted cars spooky cars?
Because I think that I said to Steve earlier this week, I said, if we talk about spooky cars, the first one I think of is
Christine.
Absolutely, from the Stephen King movie.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen that movie, haven't you, Tom?
I have, yeah. I enjoyed that movie.
And if you ever see a car that's like Christine, I don't care who you are, you're affected by that movie to the point where you just back away. It's okay. That's a pretty car, but I don't want to get closer to it.
Especially if Little Richard is playing on the radio.
On the radio, and there's nobody there to control it, yes. But I also think of the James Dean. His was a Porsche, the one that he died in, because that is cursed big time.
And I'm trying to think of who the guy was that we talked to about James Dean's car, and he told us the story of it was being transported
on a flatbed.
On a flatbed, and somewhere it just disappeared.
Yeah.
Huh. That was, James Dean was probably not the only person who was killed in a Porsche 550 Spyder. Americans were not ready for rear-engine cars, especially not high-performance rear-engine cars, and they were tricky handling. And the Porsche 911 that you can buy today is still a rear-engine car, but it's vastly different. In those days, it was an incredibly tricky thing to drive, and you can get into a lot of trouble. And the reason for that is that the engine was in back and all the weight was in back, so you had no weight over the front wheels, and the dynamics were very weird, but it was very easy to get into an oversteer situation where the back would just come out.
I bet it was great in snow. Don't you know it?
Great fun.
Right. In a big parking lot with no other cars, right?
Yeah, wow. It'd be a blast.
Yeah.
So any spooky car tales that come to mind?
You know, I was looking at this list from CarBuzz. CarBuzz is another automotive outlet. One of my favorite cursed, spooky, or scary cars was a car I didn't know the brand name of, but the 1910 Graf and Stift limousine that was driven, or not driven by, but ridden in by Archduke Franz Ferdinand when he was assassinated.
Oh.
Yeah, an interesting car. First of all, it's a really good-looking car, and that company doesn't exist anymore. It became part of the Volkswagen Group decades and decades ago, excuse me. But an interesting car. Archduke Ferdinand was shot in that car. That started World War One, and then a subsequent general who had driven that car went quote-unquote insane and had to be institutionalized.
What?
And then it was purchased by a Romanian businessman who had a crash and killed five people. So...
car. Wow.
Yeah, that is a truly cursed car.
And it's a limo.
Yeah.
So it's like a truck hitting you if you get hit by that. Whoa.
It was big. It was big for the period.
Yeah.
And again, this was, what was the brand again?
1910, Graf and Stift, Stift. And it was an Austrian brand. Not a lot of cars came out of Austria.
Wow.
And that doesn't roll off your tongue either.
It doesn't. No.
It's like one of those... They didn't have marketing people to sit around, and all they could do was come up with names of cars back then.
Yeah, wow. We just got a lot of last names in those days.
Yeah. Okay, I'll lay another one on us, a spooky car.
Those are the ones that I really like here. I'm interested, too, in the fact that JFK, car that he was in, was – this is sort of early in this happening, but JFK's car was specifically built for that purpose. So it was a presidential parade car. And before JFK had been assassinated, cars were open. And I think that's one of the crazy things about this. I don't know what kind of good faith people believed it, but it was this huge custom-built limousine for JFK used as a presidential limo, and it was just completely open. So not a thing that we would allow now.
Right, right. Was it destroyed after the assassination? I don't know that I ever heard what happened to it.
I think it's still someplace. I will look into that, but I believe it still exists.
It may be.
I do know where it's at. It's at the Henry Ford Museum.
Ah.
Okay.
I was afraid you were going to say it's the Volvo Museum, because they have so many amazing things up there. It wouldn't surprise me, but I'm surprised that survived, really, after all these years.
Yeah, I did. I actually saw the car. It's at the Henry Ford Museum, which is a wonderful place for people to go.
We've never been there, and I really want to go, because I've heard nothing but good things about the Henry Ford Museum.
Yeah, and it's not specifically automotive. It deals a lot with technology, too. There's there's a wonderful, wonderful display that isn't going to sound as cool as it is, where they take people through the history of mathematical calculation devices.
Wow.
So really early things through the abacus up to, like, crazy little tiny calculators and watch calculators. It's a really fascinating display because it's a this wonderful chronicle of how things evolve over time.
Okay.
Am I wrong, or is it the Henry Ford Museum that supposedly has Einstein's last breath?
Not Einstein's. Thomas Edison.
Edison's. Yes. Okay.
And it always tickles me to think that Edison was on his deathbed. He says, you know, bring me a jar. Yeah. I need to breathe into it so we can give this to my buddy, Henry Ford. Really?
Didn't Henry collect that intentionally? It seems weird that a man of science would believe in his last breath, but I do know it exists, and I think it's at Greenfield Village, which is part of the Henry Ford.
Okay, have you ever had a car you personally that was you thought was haunted?
You know, a funny thing happened. The car I grew up with in high school, for most of high school, was a 76 Pontiac Ventura, and for people who don't know what that is, it's like a Chevy Nova. And it was very easy to work on. We had a V8. It was an easy thing for a high school kid to tinker with. But I was thinking about getting rid of it, and I was looking at shopping for cars, and I was at a dealership looking at a used Volkswagen Scirocco, and I was considering trading in my beloved Ventura. And as I leave the dealership to go back to the car, I noticed that the flashers were on. And I didn't turn them on, and I didn't need them, so...
Oh,
like, does the car know? Is the car sad?
Don't sell me, please. Don't trade me in, Dad. Wow. Okay, my creepy story is 1975. I was dating a guy who's a bit of a car hound. I was with him one time when we were in a restaurant, and they announced who is in the 1966 Mustang, red Mustang. And he jumped up and he said, "That's me. Why? Is there something wrong?" Well, there was a guy at the reception desk who wanted to buy it right there in the restaurant. So he actually did sell it to that guy and made quite a profit, and he bought a Karmann Ghia. And it was a 1970 Karmann Ghia. It's a cute little car. He came to pick me up on a date. That day, I had taken upon myself to make a drastic change. I had hair to my waist. I had it pulled back in a ponytail, and I had the ponytail cut off. When I opened the door, he was stunned because now I've got short hair. Oh. I handed him my ponytail. He put it in the glove box. And I bet you if he walked in here today, he would tell you it's because that ponytail was haunted. His car was wrapped around a light post that night. And I said, I said, did you get my hair out? He goes, hell no. You're the reason it got wrecked.
So the question is, was the car haunted or was your hair haunted?
Hair haunted. We didn't have much of a relationship after that. Because I'm like, oh, okay. You didn't get my hair out of the car. Come on. That was my gift to him.
Wow.
Yeah, weird.
The blatant plug light has gone off. So if people want to follow you, how should they do it and where should they go to check out Consumer Guide?
Yeah, just go to consumerguide.com. And from there, you can check out our 2024 Best Buy picks, which will become 2025 Best Buy picks in the next couple of weeks. You can listen to the podcast right there on our homepage, so it's easier probably to subscribe. And you can go to our blog where I do all sorts of stories. And I recently did a story, for example, mostly for my edification because I didn't know either. I wanted to look into what winter blend gas was.
Yes.
So that story is up and posted now.
We're going to break, but when we get back, can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
Because there is a difference, mm-hmm. and it also impacts the price of gas, too, as you go from one formulation to another.
And a listener has a question about a 2024 EV, a Kia EV, and says, have you heard about a recall? And I looked it up, and we'll talk about that, too. So we got a lot to cover with Tom Appel talking cars here on WGN.
Screaming skin. My skin cries. My blood sighs. I still owe some dread on this hike. Following my trust in wonder, I watch the circus begin. I can't ignore the scent of it, the scent of my screaming skin.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I'm amazed that you don't hear that more often as we get close to Halloween.
Yeah.
That is one of Tom's tunes, Tom Appel, publisher from Consumer Guide. And Tom, you want to explain who that is and what that is?
Yeah, that's Blondie from the 1999 album No Exit, and it's an incredibly good album. Had the hit single Maria on it, and while Screaming Skin, the song is not necessarily a Halloween song, it felt appropriately gruesome.
Yeah. The lyrics are really weird.
Yeah. It absolutely fits it with the Halloween motif.
And the way she's singing it, too.
Yes, she's singing it.
I've never heard of that by Blondie. Wow. 1999, Screaming Skin. Just the name is creepy, too. All right.
We touched on the difference in winter gas, summer gas. You want to jump into that for a second?
Yeah, we could talk about that. I had to look into it myself because someone asked me about it, and I realized I was woefully underinformed on the topic. But people probably know who follow the news and follow gas prices that in the summer we switch to summer blend gas, and in the winter we switch to winter blend gas. And we just made that change. Typically in Illinois, that's around September 15th. And sometimes there's a weird problem with the supply of the two types of gas, and gas prices briefly spike because there isn't enough of one blend or the other. But the two gasolines are interesting, and they don't do what I think people think they do. So we have two blends of gas, and the goal of formulating two blends is to reduce environmental emissions, but it's not tailpipe emissions, it's evaporative emissions. So the problem with gasoline, one of the problems is not just when you burn it and put it through your car, but when you put it into your car, a lot of it evaporates into the atmosphere, and gasoline will easily and quickly become a contributor to ground level smog, which is very unhealthy. And the blend change, as dictated by the federal government, is to reduce that. So winter blend gas is what we used to consider regular gas. And summer blend gas is a special blend that has a lower, and I'm trying to find the number here, something called a reed vapor pressure, or RVP. And basically, it's been reformulated to evaporate more slowly. And that reformulation does cost a little bit more money, and we tend to run into it in the summer.
And the reason for doing that is that the difference in temperatures has that significant an impact on the kind of gasoline you're putting into your car?
Exactly, yeah. In the cold weather, the gasoline doesn't evaporate as quickly, so it's considered less of a detrimental. The regular gasoline is considered less detrimental in cold weather.
So it's butane, basically, that it either has more or less, which causes the evaporation to occur? Is that correct?
Yep. Butane is what's in regular gas, and it's normally there, but butane is what likes to evaporate.
Mm-hmm.
So they replace some of the butane or more of the butane with something called alkylite.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also a hydrocarbon, and I think it's also naturally existing, but they replace that, and that vastly reduces the amount of gas that evaporates. And that evaporation usually takes place when you fill your car, because you're forcing liquid into a tank that has air in it, and that air has the evaporated gas that squirts out, unfortunately. Also, just from like the gasoline tanks at the gas station, those do leak a little bit. They do vent.
Hmm.
Okay, I'm waving the you ain't born knowing this stuff banner over my head as I ask this question. How does that impact, since you said it equates to regular gas, what does that mean to people who use premium gas in their cars, if anything?
This is the stock fuel, so it does not impact octane in any way. So the octane numbers don't change, and performance doesn't change much. The alkylite that replaces the butane has a slightly higher energy content, but it's so little, it's less than 2%, you're probably not going to fill it. The only real performance condition that might exist is if you have a very old car with a carburetor, you're still running summer blend gas, and you try to start it in the winter, that might be a problem.
Oh.
See, now you know why Tom gets paid the big bucks.
Well, it's an excellent article that you have on your blog, Tom, so folks can read more by going to your blog at Consumer Guide, correct?
Yeah, and I'll share this on Twitter right after the show.
Okay, good. So what is...
And soon you need to know how to share it on Threads.
Man, my co-host on the podcast, Jill Simonello, is on me to get on Threads, too.
He's just holding out just to be ornery. That's all.
Yeah.
That's just lazy.
All right. I want to get to some of the questions, too, from our listeners. Listener says, I have a 24 Kia EV9. Have you heard about a recall? And so I looked it up, and sure enough, Tom, had you come across this? It's a software error that causes the instrument panel screen to go blank.
That's not good.
No.
No, I did not see that. I saw a bunch of little small batch recalls on that vehicle, like dozens of vehicles. But that's a big one. And I did not hear about that. And I'm sure they're going to get on that right away. The EV9, for people who don't know, is this wonderful three-row crossover. And it's sort of the first non-luxury brand three-row crossover available as an EV. And it's a very nice vehicle. And it's very important to Kia's future.
What was the car we were talking about just a couple weeks ago where we were talking about how the screen went blank? And again, it was some kind of a software update.
Right.
Yeah, I was driving the Infiniti QX80, which is a tremendous update over the old version of that vehicle. The old vehicle was frankly terrible, and I like the new vehicle very much, but the screen just went completely blank on me, and I couldn't do anything about it, and then I turned the vehicle off for an extended period of time, and it did pop back up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I have heard from a lot of sources, because I've never had this happen, when the screen goes blank, it doesn't mean you don't have control of the car. It just means you don't have an indication on your dash of what the car is doing.
Well, let's use the Kia as an example. 14,163, by the way. 24s and 25 EV9s will be recalled. The NHTSA report says, quote, due to a software error, the instrument panel screen may fail and go dark. When an instrument panel screen fails to display critical safety information like the speedometer or warning lights, it can increase the risk of a crash.
You think?
So, to the listener's question, apparently he's already received notification or got wind of it. Apparently, dealers will update the instrument cluster software in person or through an over-the-air update, and the service will be completed for free. If you haven't been notified, you will be notified this week by October 31st that you have to get this taken care of.
And I don't think, at least it hasn't been the case with our newest vehicle, you shouldn't have any problems doing the over-the-air updates. They're really relatively simple to do. You just in most cars you'll see there is an indication, yes, this update is mm-hmm. available, and you say, okay, do the update, and it's like you're doing a computer update, because basically these days we are driving computers on wheels.
Right.
We are. One of the interesting things about that, too, is what we're going to see, and I've seen this more and more, very small things that would normally go uncorrected will be corrected because of over-the-air updates,
mm-hmm.
Because they can be at very little expense.
Okay, a couple questions from our audience, and then we'll take a break and squeeze in as much as we can in the next few minutes with Tom O'Pell.
Including some really interesting information you have on a new Volkswagen, so we want to get that in a couple minutes, too.
Big deal.
A listener has a question about the hybrid 4Runner. What do you know about? Is it going to be this year or next year for a hybrid 4Runner?
It's being called a 2025 model. And the 4Runner has been completely renewed. That's a vehicle that was very old, but also very popular. It was very reliable. Mm-hmm. People liked it, and it was incredibly good off-road. But they had to finally update it for a bunch of reasons. And it will be available next year with a pretty punchy hybrid version of the iForce Max powertrain. That engine has been tested in other Toyotas for a couple of years now. It's been very reliable. It's very good. And the fuel economy is even decent. So, you know, it's worth waiting for.
Well, the listener from a 319 area code says, in your opinion, Tom, since the 4Runner is a reality, has Toyota earned valuable experience with the Prius and the RAV5, or should I wait a year or two for the new hybrid 4Runner?
This is actually a different engine than you would find in the Prius. This is pretty specifically a truck engine, but I would not worry about waiting. It's been in other cars for a couple of years now, and Toyota very, very, very rarely makes mistakes. Reliability is almost never a question.
Other than that engine thing.
That's bad. They are taking care of that, though.
Yeah.
But I remember a time, too, when, especially of General Motors vehicles in the 80s and 90s, it was commonly understood that you didn't buy one for the first 2 years.
Right. Yeah, you always
what
waited.
What a terrible reputation to have.
Yeah. And it was hard to shake that reputation, too, as cars improved so dramatically over the years.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Come right back. More questions about cars with our guest, Tom O'Pell, here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's one of Tom's Halloween tunes, Tom mm-hmm. being Tom O'Pell, publisher of Consumer Guide. And Tom, that is who and what?
That is the Surfrajets, my favorite active surf band, and that song is Satan's Holiday from 2012. No record yet. They only have that available as a video on YouTube.
Where do we know that melody from? Because that melody is so familiar.
Some TV show.
I think it's actually a take on a Christmas song, and I can't remember what it was.
A Christmas song?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a Christmas carol that they've satined, as it were.
Wow.
Julian looks like he is poised with an answer.
That sounds like it's a riff on In the Hall of the Mountain King.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Huh.
I don't know what that is.
That was a three yes answer.
So there's no quibbling with that. It's a yes.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to take, you love the Surfer Jets. Guess what? The Surfer Jets did that song. It's available on YouTube. They were at Space in Evanston when they performed it. And the video of them performing it on that stage is available.
Well, that's cool.
It was in August of 2022. Yeah.
Before we run out of time, Tom, you have some interesting information about something brand new from Volkswagen. What is this?
Yeah, and it took everyone by surprise. We knew it was coming, but Volkswagen, and Volkswagen is a huge company, and it's not just the brand Volkswagen, but it also includes Audi and Bentley and Bugatti and a bunch of other companies. Oh, Porsche. Volkswagen recently launched a brand new company that is not a division of Volkswagen, but a wholly owned subsidiary called Scout. And they're using the Scout name from 1980, the last time we saw an International Harvester Scout truck. So because Volkswagen had purchased International Harvester, which later became Navistar, they have access to this brand. And they're now using the brand Scout for a line of electric pickup trucks and SUVs that will be introduced in the U.S. in 2027.
What should we know about Scout? I mean, is it going to look like an International Harvester? Is it going to have throwbacks to anything or all new or what?
My article about this is up, so I'll put that on Twitter too right after the show. You can see the pictures. It's very attractive vehicles, and there is some resemblance to the Scout products that used to be built in the U.S. By International Harvester back in the day. But these are electric vehicles now. And here's the interesting point. There's two interesting points. One is that Scout had intended to make these all electric, but because acceptance and reaction to electric vehicles has been somewhat slower than people expected, they're going to make an extended range version of these vehicles that will have a gasoline motor to charge the electric battery or the motor if you run out of charge. So that's an extended range version. That was not expected. And the other part of this is interesting because it's going to absolutely become a court battle. But Volkswagen intends to sell these direct to consumers like Tesla does.
Mm.
So there will not be a dealer franchise involved. Mm. And that's very much going to infuriate Volkswagen's existing dealership networks that really would like to sell these vehicles.
So in your opinion, who's the target audience for this?
That's a good question. These vehicles are bigger than you would think they would be. They're, mm-hmm. they're much larger than Rivian's, for example. Rivian also sells an SUV and a pickup, but these are more along the lines of a full-size F-150 mm-hmm. and like a full-size Ford Expedition. So it's a good question about the audience. I think
maybe
the audience is...
It would be a rolling office.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like the way GMC sells its products,
right.
the professional grade kind of thing. They're talking about surprising affordability, that these vehicles will start under $60,000, and because they will be built in the U.S. and South Carolina, they should qualify for the federal tax credit, which means these are going to be surprisingly affordable as base models. We don't know what they're going to do to add to that cost, and obviously if you go from rear drive to all-wheel drive, that gets very expensive in an electric vehicle. But these are attractive. They're going to be sold through an all-new network, direct to consumers. They will have some showrooms set up around the country, but they don't anticipate selling that way. So there's a lot here that's different and kind of cool and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The designs are kind of fresh. I like them a lot. And their target model year is 2027.
What kind of an alternative universe are we living in where the phrase surprisingly affordable is used for something costing $60,000?
What?
I guess the reason I'm using that is I would have expected a Volkswagen take on the electric vehicle as an exclusively truck brand to be somewhat in the premium zone. I was thinking that these would be more Rivian priced, which would make them more $75,000 to $95,000. So these are bigger than Rivians, and at this point, if they stick to these prices, more affordable.
Again, so $60,000 is not considered premium?
Wow.
You know, it's funny how many midsize SUVs have gotten to that. I recently drove a version of the 2025 Ford Explorer that was $62,000.
Mm. All right. Real quick, I said to a listener, I would try to get an opinion from you on his 2016 Tucson leaking oil, been to the dealer three times for a repair. At what point do you think one qualifies for an engine replacement?
Yeah, an oil leak should not be an oil replacement or an engine replacement situation. It's usually something along the lines of a gasket someplace, and I don't know why it would take three times to fix it. Now, if it's not a leak, if it's consuming oil, then you want to replace that engine or get that fixed. But I would have him try a different dealership, and I would also have him try contacting somebody at Hyundai to see what's up with that, because he's failed to get this fixed three times, and obviously as a consumer that's unacceptable.
Yeah,
and how does that go along with the lemon laws? I thought the lemon laws were kind of a three times, and now you've got a case, or
isn't that for a newer car though? This is a 2016.
This may no longer qualify for the lemon law because it is so far after the fact, but it does qualify under Hyundai's very, very generous warranty. And if he's the original owner, that warranty is for 10 years or 100,000 miles. So he's still under that warranty.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So he would want to address this while he remains under warranty or have documentation that proves that he had addressed this under warranty and it wasn't fixed.
But, right.
If you guys would like, I'll try to get a hold of somebody that he should contact.
Oh, that would be great.
Please do, yes.
Thank you. All right, okay. This is unfair. We've got 1 minute left in the show. I want you to answer the caller or the texter from a 608 area code who suggests that you seem to lean more toward foreign cars. U.S. is making great cars. Are you prejudiced? You've got 30 seconds.
Feel no pressure.
That's a great question. The folks at Consumer Reports just issued their annual reliability study. And unfortunately, Japanese cars do dominate the upper half of that list, but American cars are now making their way up into mainstream. So I don't think that I have a natural bias. If I have a bias at all, it is because I like the feel of the way some vehicles drive, especially Hondas and, say, Volkswagens and BMWs. Mm-hmm. But I would not say that that's a bias in terms of how I would recommend a vehicle to people.
And I think we all agree that U.S. vehicles, we're getting some great quality of vehicles. We've been saying that for years.
And I would have argued that back in the 70s or 80s or even 90s, you could make the argument that foreign products quality was better. Today,
I wouldn't
make that argument today. Today, it's pretty much a level playing field. In fact, quality is the price of admission.
It is, absolutely. And I just drove the Buick Envista, which is Buick's most affordable car. I couldn't possibly recommend that vehicle more highly.
Hmm.
This is Buick's smallest and most affordable vehicle. It's under $31,000, fully equipped. Wonderful car. I wish it was available with all-wheel drive. That is really my only hesitation point on that vehicle.
Well, we covered a lot of ground, Tom. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
and to answer another question, how do you spell your last name? It's APPEL.
Yep.
And people should check out consumerguide.com, and they can follow you on Twix.
I'm on Twix.
And soon they'll be able to follow you on Threads, won't they, Tom?
Yes.
Relatively soon, yes.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I'll talk to your relatives.
Talk to you soon.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That
That's Resurrection.
That is Resurrection Mary. And that's the Vaughn Building. That's the name of the group. And
the lead singer and lead guitarist is Wendy Snyder's boy, Michael.
Yeah.
He sounds good. And I've never heard this version of, so this must be their original tune.
It's an original version of their, it's their song about Resurrection Mary.
Neat.
Yeah, that's fun. And you can find that, again, it's the Vaughn Building. They have a, they've got their own YouTube site. They've got their own Facebook page and
they've got
website.
Wendy.
And, yeah.
So if you have questions, ask Wendy. She'll tell you about her boy.
But we played that, A, because we like it and they're good, and B, because it's Resurrection Mary. Those of you who have been with us for a while know that about this time of the year, we have, for years,
decades,
spent a little time with our late friend, Chicago's ghost hunter, Richard Crowe. And when Richard would join us, he would tell the tale, a lot of tales, but every year his most requested story was the story of Resurrection Mary. And we have had so many people asking, were we going to play the conversation that we played last year, which was our last on-air conversation with Richard Crowe. And yes, we are going to, in a couple minutes, we're going to play Richard in studio with us and his telling of the tale of Resurrection Mary. And I will never forget the year that we had Richard in studio with us, and we got a phone call from the police department, and they were reporting a sighting that night
on
of Resurrection Mary.
On Archer Avenue, yeah. The road that's been chosen is one of the scariest, certainly the scariest in Chicago. So you probably know the story, but it's not every day you get to hear it from the master. And Richard knew how to tell a good ghost story. Oh, boy. He was truly a master at that. And sadly, passed away in 2012. He was only 64 years old, and we literally did have him on the show for decades.
Yeah.
And he would always wait till the very end of the show.
And the story of Resurrection Mary. Steve King and Johnny Putman of WGN Radio, Chicago's ghost hunter, Richard Crowe in the studio with us. And we've talked about a lot of Chicago's legends, a lot of ghost stories, but there is one that we get so many requests for from people who have heard it year after year, and people want to know if there's any updates, and people who are new to our show that are saying, what is this all about Resurrection Mary?
Resurrection Mary, in fact, is recognized around the world, isn't she, Richard?
Yes, indeed.
Because other cities, even over in Europe, they'll talk about their hitchhiking ghost, but everybody kind of bows to Resurrection Mary. She's the number one hitchhiking
Resurrection
ghost.
Mary has the staying power of all the hitchhiking ghost phantom hitchhikers around, yes.
Right. Now, she was a young girl. We think she was a teenager, late teens.
The legend is that she was a young lady, probably about 2021 or so, perhaps, when in the mid-1930s, the fascination for a lot of young women was the big band sound of that era. That was her motivation to get out there and go to dances and parties, clubs, halls, and dance the night away on the hardwood floor to that music. And that lifestyle, which was, you know, back in those days, people didn't stay home like couch potatoes like today.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't stay home and listen to CDs. You went out there and found live music to go to and dance. And she would be out there three, four, five times per week. And one night coming back from a party was involved in an automobile accident, and she's killed. Now, the family has prepared for burial. And here's where it gets to be almost like a fairy tale here. She's buried with her dancing slippers on her feet, in her party dress with her dancing slippers on her feet. And that sets her up because when she is buried at the family plot, Resurrection Cemetery, 200,000 dead, Roman Catholic, primarily Polish-American, south-southwest of Chicago in Justice, Illinois. Laid to rest, that's only the beginning, because she comes back from the dead, back to the clubs, the halls, the parties that she went to when she was alive. Only now she's a ghost on borrowed time, because she can only be out there as long as the music plays. When the music stops, time for her to go home at the end of the night, and that means get some unsuspecting young man to give her a lift down Archer Avenue, disappear in the vehicle as she passes by the cemetery, Resurrection, where she's buried, or she'll even sometimes ask to be let out of the car, run up to the gate, up to the fence, melt away there before the eyes of that young man. And, of course, for most people, it's an urban myth. Legend, folktale, no basis in reality. But when you realize that there are dozens of people, at least, that have been interviewed over the years, that have come forward with these stories, there's definitely something going on.
We've talked to easily a half dozen men. It's always been men that we've talked to.
Including police officers.
Including police officers and truck drivers. And they often will comment on the fact that when they picked her up, they knew that there was something different about her because her style of dress, whether she was picked up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, it always looked like she was out of step with the times. And literally, we talked to a truck driver. I'll never forget this. He burst into tears. He said, mm-hmm. People don't believe me when I tell them that I picked her up and that she just disappeared. She was in my cab, and then she wasn't in my cab.
And, Richard, you have a real personal connection to this story, and people can see some pictures of what you're about to tell in your book, right?
About the cemetery and the gate of the cemetery.
Right. Back in 1976... a teacher from Curie High School informed me that her brother, a fireman in Justice, had been talking to a police officer from the Justice PD, Sergeant Pat Homa, who had come from a military background in Vietnam and became a police officer out there in Justice, and was in a squad car one night on a routine police ride. This was one man, one squad situation. And just after 10 p.m. on this July night, he's told to proceed to the front gates of the cemetery, that there's a supposed woman locked inside the cemetery, blonde in a white dress, which, of course, he doesn't believe for a second, because a lot of crank phone calls when your jurisdiction includes a so-called haunted cemetery. Mm-hmm. But he goes out there to check, gets out of the squad, walks up to the gate, shines a flashlight back and forth. He sees nobody inside. But then, before he leaves, spots the fact that two of the bars are bent apart laterally. And these bronze bars are 1/16 of an inch thick, so they're hollow, but they're thicker than the width of a penny, the thickness of a penny. They were yanked apart, handprints were impressed into the metal and squeezed into the bronze, and you could see a scorching of the metal where the contact points made, ball of thumb, knuckles, and fingertips, and so forth. And at first thinking, of course, it had to be some kind of an elaborate hoax or prank, dawned on him, you'd have to cordon off the area, bring in expensive heavy equipment, and you could not get away with faking that without being spotted by hundreds of motorists driving by on a regular basis 150 feet away mm-hmm. on Archer Avenue. So he talks about that to all the other employees there that he's in contact with in Justice. That's how the word spread. I contacted him, I photographed the bars, and I would watch to see what would happen next. Well, I knew the cemetery was getting very upset, so I would write to the Catholic Cemetery Board in the spring of 1977 and offer to buy those bars for my collection. And as you both know, I've got a collection of unusual memorabilia from all around the world in my travels of supernatural-related material. I'd love to have bars with handprints of a ghost in it, but the cemetery would not sell. I got a curt letter back from the Archdiocesan Cemetery Board, signed Pat Quinn, mm-hmm. the father of our current governor, who ran the Archdiocesan Cemeteries back in those days under Cardinal Cody, and I was turned down. And right after that happened, I'm driving by, and I spot the bars from a distance, and they're burned black. It was an attempt of the cemetery to blowtorch the marks away, which did not work, and people still kept coming, and they would come and wrap their hands around the metal and feel the impressions in the metal and so forth. And as that continued, and Halloween is approaching, the next step on the part of the cemetery was to saw the bars out. The two bars were cut out, sent away. I didn't think they'd ever come back, but they did. Over a year later, December of 1978, during the time they were missing, there was mesh tied into place over the gaping hole, and these bars were sent to a mill, straightened, and the handprints obliterated. They're back. They've been repainted now three times, black, then green, then gold. But it's all an attempt to cover up and suppress, destroy. But in my book and in my DVD, I've got the photographs of the bars. You can see it for yourself that something very special happened out there back in the summer of 1976. And that's only one aspect of the Resurrection Mary material that's out there. I think it's very important, though, because it's more than just a sighting. It's more than just a eyewitness report, if you will, because it's actual physical evidence that existed for a time right there at that spot.
Now, there are a couple of pubs, restaurants, and bars on Archer. Has Mary ever ended up outside of any of these establishments?
Well, the one bar out there, Chet's Melody Lounge, attracts a lot of attention because it's the only bar open for miles on that stretch of roadway all across the street from the cemetery. Here's a very interesting tale from 1980. The deacon from the Greek church out there, Holy Cross, was coming back to the last service on a Sunday night. And this is in the summer of 1980, and he's coming up along Archer Avenue, north by northeast. As he gets to the front gates, he spots Mary out there in the roadway. So he hits the brakes, and she disappears. At that point, he does a U-turn, and he winds up at Chet's Melody Lounge to get a stiff drink, and he talks about what happened. Word gets out to a reporter from the Valley Times, published in Lyons, Illinois back then, and that reporter contacts the deacon of the church, interviews him, stories picked up locally, but then gets picked up by USA Today, goes international, and that deacon at that point goes to his superiors in the Greek church and requests a new assignment, and they send him to Denver, they send him to Dallas, but he will not come back to Chicago any longer, doesn't want to be in the area in the Midwest anymore because of his fear of what happened that night. And as I like to tell people, I mean, what is he worried about? It's not Freddy Krueger. It's Resurrection Mary.
Yeah.
But it was too much for him to handle, so he doesn't want to be in the area any longer.
You talked about earlier how there haven't been as many sightings of Resurrection Mary because you don't have the live music out in that area anymore. But what was the most, to your knowledge, the most recent reasonably documentable sighting of Resurrection Mary?
The most recent would have been a UPS driver just 3 years ago. 3 years ago. Now, that's what I know. And the point is, as you know from talking to people, Johnny, when you've got people who have a very intense experience like this that's so soul-shaking here, that they don't automatically come forward within a 6 months or a year or whatever. Mm-hmm. Often it's 5 years down the road or so before I even hear about it because they don't want to come up and admit to that for fear of ridicule, for fear they're going to be in some way stigmatized here for coming up with a story that is not supposed to be real.
I remember in the early 80s, we talked to employees from Chet's Melody Lounge, and they recounted what happened the night when the deacon ended up there. Of course, we couldn't talk to the deacon. He didn't want to talk. Over the years, when we talked to the truck drivers, I remember they used different names because they said, no one will believe me. I don't want people to think that I'm a nut. I don't want my job to be in jeopardy. I don't want people to think I'm drinking while I'm, you know, I'm on the job.
Right. District Towing is just a couple doors away from Chet's Melody Lounge. And on my DVD, for instance, I've got a great interview with a tow truck driver about his incident, his tie-in with a first-hand account like this. But I think one of the more curious cases dates from the year 2000, and that's a young lady from Thailand that I met, Jeannie, and I tell you her last name, but I can't pronounce it. You know, some of those Thai names are so convoluted. But Jeannie told me about the night. I was in the month of May, and once the full moon in the sky in so many of these cases, by the way, and she's coming along Archer Avenue, north by northeast, comes to where Roberts Road and Archer touch, if you know the area, traffic light right there, and she's waiting there for the traffic light to turn green. Well, she's waiting for the light to turn. She spots a woman in white coming up along the side of the vehicle. Now, because it's May, because it's prom time, she thought, in a weekend, she thought it was just a prom date that went awry until she realizes the figure coming up along the side of the vehicle has no face. It's a faceless ghost. Jeannie runs the red light, gets home, wakes up her sister, tries to explain to her what happened. The sister's from Thailand, did not grow up in the area, so the sister's useless to help explain it. But luckily, the sister's married to a local guy. The two women drag him out of bed and explain what happened, and he says, don't worry about it. It's only the ghost of Resurrection Cemetery, yada, yada, yada. And so at that point, Jeannie said that she knew she had a ghost experience. She described it to me later, knowing of my interest in this. But because of Jeannie's English situation here, not knowing English 100%, and because of her agitated state of mind, she misheard what her brother-in-law told her, and as she described the incident to me, she said, that's the night that she encountered graduation, Mary.
Oh.
So got the graduation period of time mixed up with the name Resurrection Mary, and right after that happened, she went to a gambling boat and won big money, and she attributed that change in her luck into the Resurrection Mary sighting. So being a good devout Buddhist, she gets some prayers on colored paper, sticks those prayers on different posts out there where she saw Resurrection Mary. Right after that happened, after she sticks the prayers out there for the soul of Resurrection Mary, buys a lottery ticket, wins more big money. So I think that those out there in the audience that are fearful of Resurrection Mary had better look at it a different way, maybe with a different viewpoint here, that perhaps if you see Resurrection Mary, it signifies not something scary or whatever, but signifies a possibility of great change in your life. Buy a lottery ticket.
So there you have the story of Resurrection Mary from our late friend, Chicago's ghost hunter, Richard Crowell.
If I see Resurrection Mary, I'm going to church first, and then I'll go buy the lottery ticket.
Yeah.
As simple as that. It was great to hear his voice, too. So that was probably his very last radio interview. Halloween,
and that was in 2011.
Halloween 2011. We always had Richard on for St. Patrick's Day, so we may have been able to sneak him in, but we had left the radio station full-time by the time 2012 rolled around, and he passed away in 2012 at the age of 64.
But to those of you who were nice enough to email and text, we hope you enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot more coming up. We will tell you what we go on. We have going on next week, which will be a six-hour show, a more than full show because of the time change. We will be on for six, count them, 6 hours.
Mm-hmm. Been there, done that for those people who are saying, oh my, I don't know if you can handle 6 hours.
Yeah, we did that for the better part of
decades.
27 years. And among the things we will be doing next week, our friend Sue Foley, who's going to be appearing at Evanston Space, a terrific guitar player, blues singer, guitarist. She'll be joining us. And Patrick Crispin will join us with all kinds of computer information. We'll also have, for that extra hour, we'll do a do-over hour.
Mm-hmm.
So be thinking about what that thing is that you would like to do over from the past year.
Doesn't have to be a negative thing.
No,
could be
a
positive
thing.
Yeah.
And since it will be our last show before Election Day, we may have a thought or two about the election.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a whole lot more stuff coming up. But right now, we want to spend a little time talking about sports.
Between the sheets.
Yes. So, Gabe, last week was a bye week, and we hope that the Bears didn't lose anything with that time off.
No, they didn't, and they got some guys healthy, which is a good thing. They did cut two players this week. They finally let go of Velus Jones, the embattled wide receiver, kick returner, running back. Couldn't really find a place on the team because he was inconsistent at best, and not to mention fumbling on kick returns, which was his specialty in college. Certainly didn't help his case. And a lot of Bears fans were surprised he wasn't let go sooner. And they also let go of fullback Kari Blasingame, and I kind of figured his days were on the roster were numbered when they were putting Doug Kramer, a backup offensive lineman, in at fullback instead of him on some of those run plays. So so the Bears make those cuts. Of course, that doesn't mean they may not try to bring players back, obviously. You know, you can only have so many people on the roster, especially for game day, and, you know, with the players that they've added with guys that were hurt. You know, their position needs could change as the season moves forward, but those are the moves that they made this week. And for the most part, everybody is healthy. I mean, there were some injuries on the injury report, nothing too drastic. But their opponent, the Washington Commanders, their quarterback, Jaden Daniels, says he only practiced Friday. He got hurt last week against Carolina, suffered a rib injury.
Mm-hmm.
He was taken out of the game. And he did practice, but he will be a game-time decision. Everybody's looking forward to that game because not only are both men Both him and Bears quarterback Caleb Williams were the first two players taken in this year's draft. They are also the last two Heisman Trophy winners in college football. So a lot of people have a lot of interest in seeing this game. Obviously, this will also be the best team that the Bears have faced since playing Houston early in the season. So Washington's had a pretty good year so far. They've been really good on both sides of the ball, one of the surprises in the league this year. So it's certain to be a competitive game.
So Washington is 5-2. The Bears are 4-2. So they're really well matched for this game.
Exactly. And although I will say, if Jaden Daniels does not play for Washington, Marcus Mariota, who's been in the league for close to a decade at this point, he's still proven to be a reliable quarterback in this league. And granted, they played Carolina last week, but the offense didn't skip a beat. He's going to have a bigger challenge if he ends up starting going against the Bears this week. But it'll be good to see the Bears get back on the field. Good to see, you know, if there's any improvements made now that they have, you know, players healthy again. And, you know, obviously we wanted to see them play last week, but, you know, the bye week's the bye week. And this is certainly going to be a big test for them, and it could set the tone for the team moving forward.
I haven't checked the Las Vegas line, but my pea-sized brain says it may be close, but I think the Bears are going to pull it out. What do you think?
I think they will, too, because I think the Bears are a better defensive team. Obviously, you know, regardless of who's at quarterback, Washington still has a formidable offense. They can move the ball, they can score points, and they can create problems. But again, you know, the Bears have, you know, their top, you know, six or seven defense in just about every category in the league this year. So they certainly have that to lean on. And again, it also depends on the play of the offense, which, as we've seen these last few games, their offense has continuously gotten better. And if they can continue to do that moving forward, I think they should be in good shape. But I will say this will be a close game. I do have the Bears winning 27-24.
27-24.
Okay.
It's going to be a good one. And it's at Washington. And I think it's like a, what is it, a 3 o'clock start time?
3:25. And this, so basically, from what I understand, the originally was supposed to be a noon kickoff, but because it got moved to the afternoon, there will be more nationalized on it. It won't be so much of a regionalized game as it was initially scheduled. Obviously, you know, the NFL is different from, you know, other sports where you know, where you live usually dictates what game you watch, unless of course you have streaming or, you know, NFL Red Zone or Sunday Ticket or anything along those lines. But So the Bears will certainly they'll have a lot of eyes on that game today. It'll be available across most, if not the entire country. I haven't looked at the full schedule for this week yet, but Bears will certainly have a high profile time slot today.
Oh. I'm segueing a little bit, but speaking of streaming, major news for Bulls and Blackhawks and Sox fans that they'll now be able to see those teams on FUBU.
And that's a good thing. You know, we talked about last week when I was here, we talked about the issue of, you know, the lack of availability of that network. And, you know, now this obviously helps a little bit, you know, for those who have streaming. But, of course, the issue being, you know, for those who have, you know, Comcast cable, they still can't watch it yet.
Yeah. Right.
And not everybody is, you know, aching to buy an antenna for their television to get it over the air.
And isn't FUBU like $79 a month or something like that?
You know, I'm not too sure, but I do remember that when FUBU first launched, FUBO, I should say, it was only, it only streamed sports. And there was like, I want to say there was a time where they weren't allowed to stream ESPN. That changed over the years, but they also included, you know, depending on where you live, you can get your local channels on that service now too. But initially, it was only for sports viewing, because I had looked into it many years back, and at the time I was kind of like, I don't know, and I ended up ultimately not doing it, but I'm not sure how much the cost is, but I would imagine that it could have gone up through the years because as they've added more networks and channels, especially now that they carry, you know, local TV on their service now. So, but again, the big thing is going to be getting it on Comcast because most of, and I think they're still trying to get on YouTube TV as well, but most Chicago viewers still use Comcast cable.
Yep. All right. Was I right when I said, yes, we're doing 6 hours next week? You won't be doing those 6 hours with us? Is that true?
I will not be here next week. That is true. But the following week, I will be here.
But you didn't know that it was the long night when you took off, right?
You know, I honestly thought daylight savings was going to be this week.
Ah.
So, I mean, I always get confused with that that calendar.
Okay.
By the way, before I forget, belated happy anniversary.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
15 years?
15. Married 15. We've been together for 18 already.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were young kids when we first met.
Yes.
On MySpace, by the way. We met through MySpace.
That's right. So, yes. Mm-hmm. You and Patrick both met your honeys on MySpace.
Yeah.
No, his was eHarmony.
eHarmony, yeah.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't that cool.
Thank you, Gabe. Gabe, of course, bringing you news for the rest of the night here on WGN.
And before we break for our last call, and by the way, if you want to be our last call, 312-981-7200, but you might want to check out the Steve and Johnny Show Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show, because now that it's Sunday, October 27th, it is National Black Cat Day.
It is.
And you will see a really interesting picture.
Well, a much younger black cat. Much younger. Taken at Brookfield Zoo. It was their Halloween party at Brookfield Zoo.
It was their boo at the zoo.
Boo at the zoo. I was at another radio station, and they asked if I would come out there to the zoo to MC an event with Bozo the Clown.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sign me up if I get to hang with Bozo. So we had a delightful lunch, and that's when we had kind of a startling experience when Bozo, of course, in complete costume,
no children around. Was strictly backstage at Brookfield, and we were having before everybody went out.
He tried out some of his blue material.
Yeah.
When you hear that coming out of Bozo's mouth, it's just surreal.
Bozo Blue is a whole nother world.
It's
hilarious,
funny,
but a whole nother world.
Yeah, it really is. So there we were, Boo at the zoo.
Especially in that voice.
Yes. And smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
Remember? It's like, I got to finish the cigarette before I go out there. And we're like, wow, this is so weird. And we didn't tell a soul because it was just such a weird experience.
Yep.
Anyway, that picture was taken at Brookfield Zoo.
So if you want to see my favorite black cat, go to facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show. But right now, I hear the Zamboni is in the background and the lights are flickering. And
to answer the question that was texted by a couple of folks, will we get the Zamboni twice next week? Indeed, we will. Just thinking, ran down a haunted hall here at WGN Studios.
312-981-7200. If you would like to be our
dang.
If you would like to be the last call.
If you'd like to be the pumpkin in our pie. If you'd like to be the taffy on our apple. I better stop before this gets really weird.
If you'd like to be the skeleton in our closet.
I'm going to be scared to walk out of the studio. It's weird in here anyway, because you feel like you're in a big old fishbowl up in the sky. 312-981-7200. And I just realized that next week, even though this studio is going to be spick and span because the Zamboni will roll through here not once but twice, Dean will actually be on the road kicking off Christmas with the Tree Time Show next Sunday. This is going to be a big weekend.
Yeah.
And he's no fool. He gets an hour's extra sleep before he hits the road. We're going to take a break. If you'd like to be our last caller, as long as you have not won prizes in the last 2 months or 60 days, whichever comes first, you will win prizes. If you get in here as our last caller, you don't have to have anything earth-shattering to talk about.
You don't need any pithy comments.
Nor
pithy comments.
That's with a TH.
That's right.
If you just want to stop by and say hi and tell us what your Sunday's like, maybe you want to tell us who you think is going to win the Bears game. Whatever. What are you going to wear for Halloween? There are many things we can talk about, so we'll get to our last caller coming up here on WGN.
It's that time again. We gotta say goodnight.
you know it's getting late.
Oh, yeah.
Tomorrow is another day, my friend. All right, people. It's time to go home.
Yep.
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 Losing time.
Losing time.
Head on out. So let's go. You don't have to go home.
Yes, you clearly do.
But you can't stay here.
No, you can't.
You cannot stay here.
Well, you can stay around your radio, but we ain't staying here. Answer the question from a listener who says, what are you eating when you get home? Meatloaf!
Yes.
Cold meatloaf.
Johnny made some wonderful meatloaf last night. And tonight we're going to have some meatloaf sandwiches.
We are, a little ketchup on them, cold meatloaf, a little ketchup.
And I know meatloaf is not everybody's thing. My brother Lee still doesn't care for meatloaf.
Mm-mm.
And I wasn't enamored of it when I was growing up. But the way Johnny makes it, I'm not sure what you do.
Well, I love it. Tell everyone what the secret is to
what
the
is
meatloaf.
The secret?
When you've got 2 pounds of 80-20 hamburger meat, because I like it to be, you know, juicy, not dry like a 95 lean, you need a heaping scoop of better than bouillon beef paste. I mix it in a couple of ounces of milk that I heat in the microwave oven and get it nice and smooth and melted. And I put it in the meat with the oatmeal and the minced onions, and you squish it all up real good. And that better than bouillon beef paste, not inexpensive. A jar can run you $5, but it lasts forever. And it's the secret to so many things that I cook, including the meatloaf. Which, I'm not bragging. If it's true, you're not bragging.
It ain't bragging if you've done it.
Yep.
By the way, speaking of Johnny's recipes, if you haven't, you should navigate to our blog, which is steveandjohnny.wordpress.com, and take a look at the post we put up last week, Johnny's gluten-free pork tenderloin recipe.
Yes.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
And when you...
complete with pictures.
Was that a farm animal or was that Gabe?
Or was that Julian?
Or was that Julian? Is that you?
No, that was Homer.
Okay.
It sounded a lot like Harmilda, who's the cow up in Harvey,
yes.
Illinois. That big fiberglass cow's name is Harmilda.
That reminds me, we got to talk to Max Armstrong.
We should.
It's been
too
long.
Absolutely. Okay. Costco has better than bouillon. They do. And you can get it at Walmart for quite a bit cheaper than you can at a lot of grocery stores. So if you're shopping price, look to those places. All right. Julian was not with us last week. We've got a bank of phone calls. So, Julian, I'm going to ask you to take a number.
Oh, the pressure. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Remember, this person is the pumpkin in our pie.
I pick number two.
Number two.
Number two. Number two.
Okay.
That'll be Bruce in Skokie.
All right.
Hey, Bruce. How you doing?
Hi, Bruce.
Hi. I'm doing great. I wish you guys were on earlier. This is a late night for me too.
Well, next week we'll be on earlier at 9 o'clock, and we will be here for 6 whole hours, Bruce.
I was waiting for the game then, so I knew you would start right after.
Yes.
Well, back in the 70s, I was born to a church on Addison near Central called St. Andrews, and I was part of the hierarchy there. And they wanted to open up the doors and let people know we were there. So I got the ghost hunter to come.
Oh.
Okay.
And Richard, yeah.
When everybody got there... the place was jammed.
Yep.
In the hall, and they've never had an outing like that since then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're gone now. But anyway, but he was great. I'm sad that he's gone. But I go back to the days when he was on WIND.
Sure. With us.
Well, that's where Johnny and I both had Richard as our guest on WIND.
He used to do our shows, and we were not together at that time. He did Ed Schwartz's show, and then when we came over here, he did both of he did our show literally for 40 years. We've done shows. And the listener tells us that there is audio up on YouTube going back to the oldest they've got is 1980, an interview, Steve, you're doing with Richard Crowe from 1980. Yeah.
And if you want to go take a look at our blog, stephenjohnny.wordpress.com, and do a search for Richard Crowe, you will find a lengthy blog that we did about Richard, which includes a picture of Richard fighting for Johnny's garter
at our wedding.
At our wedding.
Yeah, because it was Richard who informed us that there is a tradition in Chicago. If you catch the garter at a wedding and you go down on Rush Street, you can drink for free when you show the garter. Now, this probably does not hold true today because I could see guys buying garters and just walking in to drink for free. But back in the 80s, that was a thing. So he strong-armed every guy that was in the crowd, and he grabbed that garter, and he enjoyed the rest of the night on Rush Street. Well, what's on your agenda for Sunday, Bruce?
Just resting. I'm kind of convalescing. I've got a fracture in my hip, three breaks in my hip.
Ouch.
So my sciatic is acting up, so that's why I'm up so late, because sleeping is not... not number
easy.
One on my list.
Well, no. my strongest piece of advice is get a good physical therapist. I have three screws in my hip from an accident decades ago, and thanks to a good physical therapist, I'm able to be more mobile than I would have been if I hadn't paid attention to her.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, I haven't started physical therapy yet. I see the orthopedic surgeon Monday.
Mm-hmm. Well, good luck to you. And thank you for listening, too. And I'm glad we're here to keep you company. You are going to get some prizes from us. We're going to send you out a WGN Radio logo T-shirt. It's the real thing. And we're also going to send you out a desktop weather station from American Weathermakers Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. They won't be comfortable until you are. AmericanWeathermakers.com. And that's a hot, hot item these days, even though it's getting colder.
So hold on, and Julian will get some information from you off the air. Boy, the show's going by fast.
I know
it was a shorter than usual show. But again, next week, a full six, count them, 6 hours, starting at 9 and ending at 2 and then ending again at 2. Oh, and
we should call it the deja vu hour. Well, no, if it was deja vu, we'd just be doing the same thing all over again.
Yeah, so this is going to be the do-over hour.
Yeah, the do-over.
Where did I read the thing? I think I sent it to you. That next week, it's one of the few times where there is in the same time zone if you're by the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean, depending on what part of the... And it has to do with the panhandle of Florida. When they change times, then out in some place out in California, is it Portland that hasn't changed time yet? So they're actually on the same time for 1 hour out of the year.
One of our listeners, a lot smarter than us, took the time to write that down for us to save for next Saturday night's show. So we will do that. One more thing that we will sneak into those six hours. And knowing us, guess what? We're going to get to the end of the show and go, oh, darn, we've got a whole page full of things that we didn't get to. As happens every time. But we do want to take a moment to thank you all for joining us tonight. I'm sorry that it was on the heels of a loss by the Hawks, but it was fun there.
But fourth in a row.
And we walked in the building just as we walked in, and everybody was going crazy. It sounded so good. And then the wheels kind of fell off.
Yeah, the only thing that was good about that is we got to see Charlie.
That's right. Yes. So, again, our thanks to Ron and Gabe over in the newsroom and to Bob, the keeper of the big plug, and to Julian, who does so much on the other side of the glass that you'll never know about.
As long as we keep bribing him, you'll never know about some of the things he sees.
Bribing?
Well, no, because, you know, things that you see on this side of the glass, we're bribing you so that you won't tell anybody.
Okay.
Like the salami I was passing out a half hour ago.
The cookies.
cookies. So, yes.
Salami and chocolate chip cookies.
I know, it's very strange. But
we finally mentioned food.
Yes, we did.
Okay. We got to get out of here. We'll talk to you next week for 6 hours.